Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Can anybody hear me out there?
Yeah, I can hear you.
We are having another technical difficulty. And it keeps asking me, do I want to shut the show down? And in the episode, and I'm trying not to do that, but it won't let me do otherwise. Apparently, this episode is canceled. And it's not letting me go any farther.
Do you think it's asking you, Oscar, can you hear me?
I hear you.
Do you think it's asking you about your credentials?
No, it's not asking me. Here you go. 7473 is up now. Well, welcome to Blog Talk Radio, as it is on this beautiful Saturday morning. I hope everyone can hear me. Please listen to what's about to happen. We're having a few technical difficulties at the moment, but here's what you can know for sure. There are three kinds of people: those who make things happen, those who watch things happen, and those who wonder what the heck happened. And I'm one of those this morning. I'm wondering what the heck happened. So let me let you in on a little secret. Mr. Jansen Brooks is about to come before you, and he is going to lay out the menu for us. Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by, Mr. Jansen Brooks.
Okay, Oscar, are we recording?
Yes, we are.
Oh, okay. I'd just like to welcome everybody to the show today. This is the Council of Elders show, Saturday, May the 1st, 2021. Again, my name is Jansen Brooks, and you're listening to the Council of Elders Call-In Talk Show. For you new listeners, let me give you the purpose of the Council of Elders. The purpose of the Council of Elders concept is to maintain a platform for elders, seniors, if you will, to give advice, counsel, and life experience to younger people, advice that can help them navigate successfully through life, deal with issues, and avoid some of the pitfalls that affect everyone. The concept is based historically on African culture, where elders in the community had council members to help guide tribe members, settle disputes, and encourage. Young people, you're especially invited to call in with questions or issues today. Our dream is to have a Council of Elders group or organization in every community in America, and for the Council of Elders to be known about in the community so that people could have an opportunity to get advice from elders about their concerns. But it first starts with a single Council of Elders group. So we're assembling a group of elders here in the Sacramento, California area. We would like to have about 10 volunteers. Once we get enough volunteers, we can go to youth centers, juvenile halls, boys and girls clubs, and churches. We can also be available to young adults as well. Sometimes they need advice on how to raise kids, how to get along in their careers, their marriages, etc. Moving forward, this is an effort to bridge the gap between young people and elders. The younger generation of today and the older generation should start to merge. The Council of Elders is an effort to do so. So, is our guest on yet, Oscar? Hello?
I'm sorry. I had my mic muted. I was about to make an announcement about muting your mic. This is Oscar Bessent, and ladies and gentlemen, we are having a few technical difficulties. Apparently, our guest can't come online at the moment. We're still waiting for him. We have some others online. But, Mr. Brooks, I thought you were going to talk to us today about some financial stuff for young people and how they can put aside some money, save for what's around the next corner.
Well, my guest, David Fontaine, who wrote a book on that, was going to really do most of the talking, Oscar. He has a new book out called The Black Financial Literacy and Wealth Building Bible for Individuals, Family, and Community Empowerment. And he had 10 points he was going to talk about. Apparently, he must be having some issues today. But some of the things
Caller,
he talked about.
Caller 7473, you're live on the Council of Elders.
Hello, everyone. Malcolm Hughes here again. Glad everybody's here today. Jansen, I have a question for you about life insurance. Could you tell us how you do life insurance, right? You sell life insurance, right?
Right.
Yeah, full disclosure, you do sell life insurance.
Yeah, I did sell life insurance for quite some time.
Okay.
Yeah, that was good.
How do families use life insurance for generational wealth building?
Oh, yeah, that's a very good question, Malcolm. Because a lot of people, when they're starting out, like, let's just say you got three generations of people, all of them pretty much in poverty. And let's just say that the parents of the last generation has a life insurance policy, and they tell their kids, listen, I want you to take, you know, when I don't really have a lot of money to give you while I'm alive, but I have a life insurance that you can use to purchase yourself a house, buy yourself a business, buy yourself a land, some land, and I want you to take this money and use it wisely so that your children won't have to start from scratch, just like I did and just like you did, so that generations from now, the generations can rise up, and they, each generation won't have to start from scratch. So a lot of wealth has been generated through life insurance policies. And also, if you really look at it, people like Walt Disney, Henry Ford, these people had cash value life insurance where they were paying on it, and the life insurance policy built cash value, and they were able to use that to start businesses. Walt Disney used it to start Disney World, and Henry Ford also used it. A lot of people use life insurance as a method of saving money, believe it or not, whereas these policies are overfunded. Nowadays, they have what you call index universal life policies, whereby you're paying for the life insurance, but you're putting extra money in it, which grows tax-free. And then you can take this money out, what you call a loan, and you can take it out tax-free. And so that's called an Index Universal Life Policy. But the life insurance, as you know, we knew it years ago, has really evolved into a method of generating generational wealth, Malcolm. But that's a good question.
Excellent question, Malcolm. Today you are dubbed the host of the Council of Elders show, and I would appreciate you continuing to interview our special guest, Mr. Jensen Brooks. Please continue.
Listen, I have to be transparent myself. I'm looking at buying life insurance at age 65. Is that what do you advise a 65-year-old person who has no life insurance?
Well, I see that every day. People 65.
Really?
Life happens. Sometimes they had it when they were young. And then, you know, the kids needed shoes or they needed to pay the rent or, you know, just stuff happens and they had to drop their policies. And then a lot of people just didn't believe in life insurance for whatever reason. But I'm a broker so that I don't just have myself handcuffed with one company. I mean, I can find the best solution for an individual. Whether, you know, they're 65, there's always a best solution for whatever age. And so if you're 65 and you still haven't gotten any life insurance, it's not too late.
Might I ask a question here? Ron Rogers, Sacramento.
Thank you. Thank you.
And And you're exactly right, Jensen, in the fact that your needs change. When we were younger, we needed that at that time. You know, it was a big thing to have a $100,000 policy or a $200,000 policy. But you were betting against life that you were going to be able to fulfill that. They were betting you were going to die early. Or you were, really, to get that kind of money. But by the time you get 50 and you don't need that kind of coverage, you're not making $100,000 a year or your needs go down. That was my reason for dropping. But at the same time, it cost me more to insure myself because I'm older and now I got these previous conditions and this type of thing. Now, what I'm looking at my 69th year is really kind of insuring myself with investments, with annuities, and that type thing. And I like what you said earlier. Full disclosure there, Jensen. Yeah, I'm meeting with Brother Jensen and another gentleman this next week, and we're going to talk just about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, too, is what I want to open up to, especially us older guys, who you got a little money. You ain't got a bunch of money, but you got a little money. But we can start to insure ourselves. And that, to me, is what I'm looking at as long-term financial freedom for my family. Because,
Ron,
like you said,
let me interrupt you. When you say insure ourselves, well, what do you mean by that concept? Because I just ran across a concept called infinite banking. And, Jen, you might want to speak on that. But, Ron, what do you mean by insure ourselves, insure yourself?
Well, It right now it costs me $300 a month at least to get a $50,000 policy. I could
put that in a bank account.
But find some other thing for that $50,000 to invest in, which will make
like
me
what?
Money.
Like what,
well,
for instance?
Stock market. We're doing extremely well now. People don't want to admit it, but yeah, it's going up and it's going crazy. We have to start thinking outside the box. We were sitting around the other day talking, and somebody came up with cryptocurrency. Have we heard of that before? But nobody wants to be. We have to learn about this stuff.
I know.
We have to find out about this kind of stuff so that we can invest in it. We're not dummies.
Got cryptocurrency.
Ron, I want to say something. I have a lot of people to say that, you know, I'm going to put $300 a month in my policy in the bank or whatever, in the stock market or whatever. But at $300 a month, how much that is? $3,600 a year, I believe.
Right.
10 years.
Right. Yeah.
In 10 years, yeah, that would be $36,000. In 20 years, that would be $64,000, which is a little bit more than $50,000. But the problem is, how do you know you're going to live that long? So that's where the life insurance.
Yeah. Yeah. I do agree. I do agree.
I'm just giving you another side of the facet, that's all.
Excuse me for stopping y'all. Jan,
host Malcolm.
What happens to cash value if I got a $100,000 policy and I got, let's just say, $50,000 in it? $50,000 of cash value. What happens to my cash value upon my death? Do my beneficiaries get $150,000, or do they just get the $100,000? And I guess that depends on the type of policy, but explain that to me.
It depends on how the policy is structured. If structured properly, they'll get the $150,000. If it's not structured properly,
okay.
They'll only get
Sure. Finish your thought, Jensen, please, because I think our host just arrived. I mean, our guest just arrived. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Another thing I did want to mention, Malcolm, too, is what you call single premium life insurance. That's where a person puts, they got $50,000, for example, and they put it in a life insurance policy as a single premium, only one premium. So what happens is, depending on your age and your health, that $50,000 could turn immediately into $80,000 death benefit. So single premium life insurance can, you know, that sort of satisfies a lot of people that have, you know, lump sums of money to leave their heirs. And with a single premium life insurance policy, they can then, like I said, sometimes double the money for the death benefit that they put in. So that's something to consider as well.
This looks like a good place to pause. Please, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Council of Elders show. This is Saturday, May 1st, and with the proper fanfare, we are about to introduce to some and welcome others to Mr. David Fontaine.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you, sir. Stand by.
Fantastic. Sorry for the delay. To be honest with you, I thought the show was starting at 11. I was mixed up on my times, and I thought it was 11 versus 10, and I'm very sorry for that. I'm a man that believes in being punctual on time, as always. So I had a little mix-up on the time. So I apologize to the host and the audience for the debate.
Right. Well, David, we won't worry about it. Let me introduce you, David. Today we have as our guest David Fontaine. David has worked for 35 years as a business owner, financial representative, insurance agent, and real estate investor. As the owner of a financial Services, an insurance agency, he grew it into one of the largest in Sacramento, California. During his years in business, he observed the wealth gap and the need for financial literacy education within the minority communities. After selling his agency, which I believe was an Allstate agency, he started the Minority Financial Literacy Center to address this need. As the CEO, he developed the 11 principles for building individual, family, and community wealth. His book offers financial literacy education and wealth building solutions. The title of David's book is the Black Financial Literacy and Wealth Building Bible for Individual, Family, and Community Development. David is a graduate of Gonzaga University. He also has served as an online financial writer for the Sacramento Observer newspaper and was elected school board member. So, David, you got quite a resume. It's an honor to have you on the show today. Thank you for coming on the show.
It's great to be here, and I'm really happy to see what the elders are doing, and you're really making a difference in the lives of a lot of young men and community members. That is just outstanding. Obviously, you're not an organization to just talk about the problem, but you take it further and have a plan of action to work on the problem as well. It's great to be here.
Right. And so, David, now you born and raised in Sacramento?
Yes, I was. I was born and raised in the Del Paso Heights community of Sacramento, raised on the corner of Belden and North Avenue, and was raised, my dad was a minister. I call him a working minister because he had a business and preached at the same time. So he had two basic careers going on, saving souls, but also providing income for the family and the community. So I grew up.
Right.
But
I had to give you
a little bit about my dad.
David,
yeah, I grew up, just tell you a little bit about how I am. My dad built our home, and when he built the home in Del Paso Heights, he built a church right onto it. So they said, I know that man loved the Lord. He built a church right onto his home.
and it
could hold about 50 people. And we worshiped there for 20 years till the church purchased a piece of land and had 5-acre. A lot and built another church on it. But so I went right outside my first front door, walked about 30 feet, and then I was at the church.
Okay. David, you're a preacher's kid.
Yes, I am a preacher's kid. I'm proud of it.
All right. David, I would like you to in the time we have left as we spoke, each chapter of your book, give us a brief synopsis of it. I believe it's about 10 chapters. And then we will pick and choose some questions. The audience can pick and choose some questions. If you're out there, you might want to have a pencil and paper as he talks. You can, ask a question after he finishes this. Okay, David, go right ahead.
Okay, well, thank you again for having me. And let's talk about the Black Financial Literacy and Wealth Building Bible. I came to that because I was feeling my immortality. And I said I've gained all of this, a little knowledge and attention and been in business for all these years. And I said, what can I do to possibly leave a little of this information back to the community and to people that could help them so they won't go through some of the same things I went through in trials and tribulations and in developing the 10 wealth-building principles. So I sit down and start writing my book in the knowledge and what I had gained over the years and just wanted to leave some knowledge for the audience. But my first chapter is called The Wealth Opportunity Gap for Black Americans. And I call it that because, as most of us know, there is a large wealth gap between the majority community and the African-American community. The average African-American family has about $17,000, $17,100 in wealth versus $71,000 in wealth for the majority white community, which is about an 8-to-1 ratio. I call it an opportunity. It's an opportunity for us to close that wealth gap, and there are certain things that we can do to close that wealth gap. And so what I present in the book is what you can do as an individual, family, and community. And so what I stress, why I call it a opportunity, because I believe that there's some immediate things that we can do to close that wealth gap. Entrepreneurship, building wealth on your own through a business, self-reliance. You can't rely on anybody but ourselves. The best way to help us to help somebody is to help yourself first. Then you can talk about helping others. And wealth opportunity gap for Black Americans, we also talk about group investing. We may not have that amount of money on our own individually, but by combining our money with our brothers and sisters, we may be able to take advantage of some opportunities as a group that we wouldn't be able to take care individually. And so I call it the wealth opportunity gap. It's a challenge, but there are really certain things that we can do to eliminate it and decrease it substantially immediately and over time. Okay? So my second chapter would be pay tithes or donate your money and time to a charitable organization. I believe, what you put out in the universe is what you get back. God, he owns everything. So when you tithe an offering, you're just giving back what's his already. And so that's the way I look at it. If you have a firm foundation in that principle, it's much easier to follow the other principles. It's much easier to have the wealth-building mindset, which is a mindset of self-sacrifice now, so I can have much more or provide much more for myself and my family later on. So it does provide some discipline. And so that's one of the things that we can do. We have to donate our time. We have to donate our money to charitable organizations and businesses who's going to give back to the community, that's going to love the community by doing for the community. And so that's my second chapter, pay tithes or donate your money and time to charitable organizations. The third question, the chapter is 8 questions to test your financial literacy. So one of the main principles of wealth building is what we call the rule of 72. So if you take the number 72 and you divide it by an interest rate, so let's say you have $1,000 in your savings account, and you want to know how long it takes for that $1,000 to double. Well, if you're earning 5%, that money is earning 5%. It will, if you divide that 5%, 5 into 72, that will tell you how long it will take you for that money to double. So that's about 14 years for your money to double if you're earning 5%. So that's one of the basic financial rules for it to develop your IQ. Another very important principle is the principle of compounding interest, where you have a certain set amount of money. You may be earning a dividend or interest off that. You make sure that's reinvested back into the large sum of money that you have individually, and over time it will compound and grow to a substantial amount. I also call that group investing, helping one another, doing for one another. That's, I consider that a foundation, a principle, a foundation of all. You got to help and do for others like you would do for yourself. Another principle that I think is very important is you must always put something aside for later on. And so we're talking about saving now to have something for the future, invest now to have something for the future. So that's chapter 3, basically. Chapter 4 is build a household budget that allows you to save and to invest. To have a household budget, you got to know where it's your guiding point. Your budget is your guiding point. You got to have a budget that lets you know where you are at financially times. Of course, you got to have, what your income is, which is the positive side. Then you got to know what your expenses is with your negative side. And so just write that down, or there's a budget, there's an app you can get if you are with a bank, there's a budget app you have, and that bank will tell you every month how much more you're taking in versus how much you're spending. The whole idea of having a budget is it lets you know at all times where you are, you know, whether you're spending too much or you don't have enough coming in, and it lets you know what you may need to do to increase that household income, that revenue side of the budget, which means basically you may need a side hustle. If your job is not providing enough income, you may need a side hustle, you know. But also the important thing of a budget also is once you have that budget, you should have at least as a minimum, I say, 3 to 6 months saved for any emergencies that might come up as well. But the whole point of a budget, what I consider when looking at a budget, is you're trying to find money for success. You're trying to find money to invest, and that means you need a disposable income. That means you got to have more coming in than you go out than going out. So we're always looking at that budget, a way to track your expenses. You may need a side hustle, but also looking for that extra money so you can invest to grow wealthy. You can have a job making $100,000, $200,000, $600,000 a year, but if you're spending as much as you're making, there won't be any money for investment. So wealth is how much assets you can communicate. It's not how much it's how much assets you've accumulated, which is basically your savings, your retirement account, any investments you have in homes, any stocks and bonds that you may have. And so you want to make sure that you have that disposable income or that investment income to do the things that you need to do. Chapter 5 is always live below your means. I consider this
David, can I interrupt you for just a second?
Go right here. I'm sorry.
Everybody know that you're listening to the Council of Elders talk show today with David Fontaine, who wrote the Bible on financial literacy. The title of his book is The Financial Literacy and Wealth Building Bible for Individual, Family, and Community Empowerment. And go right ahead. Oh, by the way, okay. If you have a question or comment for David, press the number 1 on your phone, and we will let you ask your question or make your comment. Go ahead, David. I'm
okay. Next chapter, chapter 5. If you don't take into account any other principle, I think this is the most important principle. In chapter 5 is always live below your means. An example of that would be this. Let's say, for instance, that you're looking to purchase a home. You go to the bank, and the banker says, the lender says that you can afford to pay $2,000 a month for a home, you know, taxes, principal, interest, insurance, and all of that. But you say, well, I'm only going to get a home where I pay $1,500 a month. So what you do, you take that $500 difference that the lender said you can that you can purchase towards a home. Take that $500 difference between that $1,500 and $2,000. If you invest it in the stock market, if you invest that, so that's $6,000 a year going in the stock market. The stock market, on an average, has earned 7 to 8%. Has earned a 7-8% return over the last 30 years. That $500 a month investment over 30 years at 7% will accumulate to more than $613,000. So you're 60% on the way to being a millionaire right there. So always live below your means. Take that extra money, invest it. I know it's hard sometimes, but you got to live below your means because that provides, again, the disposable income you need to invest and to grow your wealth. And so one of the things I always say about living below your means, you got to pay yourself first. Pay yourself first, because if you pay yourself first, if you have a checking account or any kind of account, have that savings go automatically into your savings account or investment account. Then you won't feel so bad paying the taxes and the other expenses to come up. If you pay yourself first and you know you've taken care of home yourself first, then you can talk about doing those other things. Also, I think you have to know what your relationship with money. How do you look at money? Do you look at money as a tool to gain income, or do you see money as just something to support a extravagant lifestyle or to buy expensive non-income depreciation and depreciating items. Okay. My next chapter is Chapter 6, Good Credit, Your Financial Driver's License. In that chapter, we talk about what makes up your credit score, which the consequences of poor credit, ways to improve your credit, the consequences of bad credit. And my last thing I always end with is if you need credit, the credit is your financial driver's license. And why is your financial driver's license? Because you can't do anything about without credit in this society. If you want to rent a car, if you want to stay at a hotel, they ask you for a credit card. But it's your financial driver's license because if you want to have the money to invest in a business or if you have the money to buy and to want to buy anything on credit, the lower your credit score, the more interest you're going to pay. That means the more money going to another household versus your own. And, of course, if you have a very high credit score, which runs up to the credit score runs from 300 to 850, the more money, if you have a good score, the money you're going to have to invest and save. I always like to point out an example in this chapter. I always have a banker as a friend. When I was selling my business, your relationship with the banker or your bank is very important. Let that person get to know who you are, what your financial state condition is, what you're doing, who you are, where you work. Just have a nice cordial relationship because you never know you're going to need them. I had a situation where I was purchasing a business and other individuals that I know had purchased the business using this person's Caucasian gentleman. And after 4 to 6 weeks, I was wondering why he wasn't moving on it. Basically, I was purchasing another Allstate business. And I had credit. My business cash flowed better than any other business that he financed. So I went on his desk. I went to visit him one day, and his my spouse sitting on his desk, he wasn't going to do anything about it. So what I did is I had a banker friend, an African-American banker friend. He had the loan done in about 2 or 3 days. So it's very important to have that relationship, establish that relationship with the friend or with the banker that can finance your business or finance your car or finance that home or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, Chapter 7, I'm sorry I'm going so slow. I apologize. Save for a worry-free retirement. So maximize your savings, your retirement savings. Don't procrastinate. Procrastinate, it will cost you time. When I say about maximize your retirement savings, is of course put as much as you can if you have a 401k account. Those are accounts that generally your employer will provide for you to and for your retirement. Many times the employer will match that up to 5% of your income. So if you're, you know, if you're making $50,000, $60,000 a year, if you put $3,000 in, he'll put in another $3,000. So I call that free money. So always take advantage of that. Invest, maximize your retirement savings. Because you don't want to, a lot of us, history shows a lot of us only do 1, 2, 3% of our income. And that's one of the reasons why we don't have the retirement we should have. As a result of that. So let's always maximize the fullest amount that you can retire. You can invest in your 401 account. And don't procrastinate. If you procrastinate, that costs you thousands and thousands of dollars and not a very secure retirement in many cases. The other thing about that particular chapter is Black Americans. More than 50% of African Americans live solely on Social Security. So you don't want to be in that number. So they rely totally on that Social Security check monthly. So you want to make sure that you're doing the things that to retire properly for yourself and your family. Okay, then the next chapter is how to invest for wealth building. It talks about the asset categories you can invest in. Of course, home ownership, investing in the stock market, investing in stock and bonds. You have to know what your risk tolerance is in your time. Risk tolerance is how much pain you can take when the market goes down, and your time horizon is when you're going to need the money. So when you start off with that goal and objectives, you're saying, I'm starting here now, and I'm going to need this amount of money in this time. So that'll direct you and guide you to what asset categories you want to go in. The more risky your investment, the more you're going to earn, but also there's more of a chance that, you're going to have some ups and downs when you take some risks. So I always say buy low, sell high, That's very important. Buy when everybody else is selling and sell when everybody else is buying. That's why right now, and I know we're in this homeowner market, if you're going to think about selling your home, there's never a better time to sell. You can sell when everybody wants to buy, so you want to sell right now. So, and also buy low. Buy when everybody is getting out. That's when you want to buy, because that's when the market is at its lowest. When everybody's scared, nobody wants to invest, that's when you want to buy. That's the opportunity there to take advantage of it. A lot of people, what I often like to tell people, we go back to the 2008 housing crisis, over 6 million people lost their home. But on the other side of that, there were 6 million investors that would purchase those homes at a very, very low rate. So we only talk about the people that lost, but we don't talk about the people that got wealthy, all those people losing their home. Now, I'm not saying taking advantage of anybody, but that's what a lot of individuals did. Smart real estate investors bought in 2008 and 2009 when nobody wanted to buy anything. They bought low, and those homes right now, as you see, the price of homes have accumulated 2 to 3% over what they, 200 to 300% over what they were then. Okay, invest in mutual funds. That's a low cost to begin investing. One of the things I talk about in Invest for Building Wealth is the Nubian Family Beauty Supply in South Sacramento. There's a group of African-American ladies that went into beauty sales salon, and they were getting poor service, and they said, we can do this themselves. So they got together, all three of them, pooled their money together. They all had different expertise, some in marketing, one of them in finance, and the other knew the market very well. So group investing, you may not be able to do it yourself, but you can do it with somebody else, and it's a great success story. When I first met them, they only had, like, I think about 200 or 300 square feet. Now they have about 1,200 or 1,300 square feet, and they're looking to franchise possibly. Okay, now I'm going to number 9, the Black Church, the key institution for building wealth and economic empowerment. The Black Church is still the primary institution in the African-American community. It may not be what it used to be, but it's the Black churches. 87% of African Americans are still affiliated with the church in some kind of way. I always like to say it's the civil rights movement led by Martin Luther would not have been successful without the Black church, without their moral support, resources, their membership. A lot of young people marched, went to jail because of the Black church. So if we're to really challenge this economic wealth gap, the Black church could be involved. The Black church has over $50 billion in assets. There are over 75,000 Black churches in America. They collect $12 billion a year. So we have to use that money to build growth. Each church, Black church, has to have a program for economic empowerment. What I talk about in my book is I give an example of 8 churches and what they've done in their individual communities as far as wealth building. One church I talk about, they stress entrepreneurship. And by stressing entrepreneurship, I say this, they had a large membership, and many people in that church wanted to go in business. So they made sure they had a business plan. They presented their plan before the committee, and some 35 people were able to receive between $2,000 and $20,000 to help them start or run their business. None of those individuals would have gotten a dime from any of the traditional banking institutions. So where there is no funding, we have to create funding. There's a church in New York City. They, over a third of all their tithes and offering goes to economic development. A third. And what they've been able to do with that, they'd be able to revitalize the area, revitalize over 40 homes in the area, took a blighted shopping center, rebuilt that, have some franchises, they have an affordable housing complex for their seniors, they have a Black travel agency, have a bookstore. So it's just some great examples in my books of what some of the churches have done and how they've influenced and made a great difference in the wealth of their individual members, but also of their community as well. And if you, every black church should have an economic development program. If you don't have one, ask your pastor about forming one with your fellow woke brothers and sisters.
Mr. Fontaine.
Go right ahead.
Mr. Fontaine, this is Oscar here, the broadcast engineer. Ever since you came on, I've been holding a question, and we have 15 minutes of showtime left, and I really would like to have your thoughts on this before you close, so you can finish your thoughts. But the question I have is, I came from a very small town in Georgia, and I always noticed that the most successful African-American people always had a funeral home. How does that work? Because their funeral home seems to be successful, and they were some of the most impressive people in our community, the most upright people. And they always, is that because death is always there for us? But anyway, hold that thought. Finish your thought, please.
No, you're certainly right. I mean, what they did is they knew there was a need. They have a business that they know there's going to be all of us going to leave here one day, going to pass one day. So they have a nice market there. One of the reasons why I went into the it's not going away. So one of the reasons why I went into the insurance business, because I knew everybody needed insurance. Everybody had insurance. They had to insure your car, you had your house. So you got a non-cyclical business because everybody has to have that money regardless of how good the economy is or how bad the economy is. You still got to have insurance. So that's one of the reasons why the funeral homes are doing so well, because they know there's a need, they responded to that need, and they developed a successful institution or to serve that need. And that's what you have to do if you're going to be in business. You have to find where there's a need. You have to, whether it's a service or whether it's a product, you have to find what that is, form a business, and market it and cater to the public, and you can go successful as a result of that. Did I hit upon anything here, sir?
Oh, that was wonderful.
Thank you very much. Next chapter is the Worldwide Net, our newest and greatest wealth-building opportunities. One of the things that's happened, everything is going online. If you're going to be a successful business person, you have to be online these days. Most everybody has a computer, has a laptop. So that's where the growth, that's where the newest business opportunities are. And what's so great about making money online, it really doesn't take a lot of money. You don't have to have a brick-and-mortar store paying paying $2,000 a month for office space before you've made a dollar. You can go online, and all you need is a laptop. Maybe you have a particular service you're advertising, and you're in business. And those who are already in business, you got to have an online presence. You got to have a marketing plan, social networking marketing plan, but you also have to have, you know, the standard traditional marketing plan, maybe direct email, direct contact with, billboards, advertising on TV. But you need a social network marketing plan with Instagram. You need to have a Facebook account, Pinterest account. So those are all the Worldwide Net is our greatest way to make money, because that's where all the growth is. And there's crowdfunding. You can raise money online, and there's online websites for making money, you know, the eBays, those particular type of sites. Okay, the next thing is Chapter 11, spend your money at businesses that hire your children and reflect your values. We must spend our dollars and investments that our businesses. There's a study done. If only one out of every 10 dollar was invested with the black businesses, that would create more than a million jobs. One of the reasons why our unemployment rate is traditionally double the unemployment rate of the majority community, we have a lot of businesses, but they're single family ownerships. So if we had more money going to those businesses, they could hire people, have a million people hired. That would reduce that large gap between our unemployment rate and the majority majority employment rate substantially. By us spending money in our business, that's we're going to hire, that's going to be mentors, That's going to be other businesses giving back in the community, spending money in the community. So that's very important. Don't wear and drive your wealth. A lot of people think that, you know, that it's the kind of car you have and what you wear as wealth. You know, it's the how many assets you have, what how much you own, you know, the equity in your home, stock you have, the rental property you have, the money in your 401k account, the money in your stock investing account. That tells you, you know, how wealthy you are. Your assets must exceed your liabilities. Support family members, relatives, friends who are strive to be entrepreneurs. I know a lot of time we put so much emphasis on athletics and entertainment, and we do very well in anything we go into. We do well, but we have to change that paradigm to talk more about individual wealth, supporting our young people that have an idea, be there for them, talking finance. That's very important, support, to give them that support, not only financially but morally. And Chapter 12, almost finishing up, purchase a home and invest in real estate. They only made so much land. They're not making any more land. Everybody needs a place to stay, whether it's a home, a hotel, motel. Everybody needs a place, so it's not going away. So interest, real estate's going to go up. So right now, presently we our home ownership rate is about 42% versus 72% for the majority population, and most of the wealth of Americans is in their home. So if you don't have a home, you're not going to be as wealthy. You know, a lot of us we have that $17,100 in wealth versus $171,000 because we don't have home, we don't own a home, which is our major way of building wealth. I talk about in the book how to get a down payment, what types of mortgages are best suited for you based upon your financial goals, and I talk a little bit about what I've done in real estate development and making money. The last chapter is risk management. So after you've accumulated all this wealth, knowledge, you got to make sure that you manage it properly, preserve it, and protect it. So you got to protect it, and I got a little bit on your conversation about life insurance. If a lot of times people have a great plan, but if you don't have life insurance, once you're gone, for that plan to continue, that plan collapses once you're not here. And so we want to make sure you have life insurance. You want to make sure if you're disabled for any way, disability income, or have a serious accident, you want to make sure that you still have money coming in so you can still work towards your wealth goals. We talk about long-term care.
At this point, Mr. Fontaine, Mr. Brooks, It's time for you to put your plug in. We have 7 minutes of showtime left, so it's time for you to remind folks that you listen to the Council of Elders show. Unfortunately, it's going to be a truncated edition because our guest was confused about, and I had some technical difficulties also. But this is Jansen Brooks speaking with Mr. David Fontaine, a wealth of information. You need to get this book so you can know what you're doing. The Gospel Elder Show is on every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. So if you missed this one, I trust that we can get Mr. Fontaine back because he is an excellent source of wealth. So if you don't have this book, you probably need it. Go ahead, Mr. Brooks.
Yes, David. Tell the audience where they can get your book. I believe you have it on Amazon and on your own website.
Yes. If you're in the Sacramento area, you can obtain the book at Underground Books. It's there in Sacramento. It's at Oak Park. If you would like to go online, you can go to amazon.com/books. You can get it there. And then you can go to my website, and that's blackfinancialwealthnetwork.com, blackfinancialwealthbuildingnetwork.com. You know, it's funny. Let me make sure I got that title right. I should know that, but sometimes I get my own website mixed up. Let me see what we got here. Here we go. Yeah, the Black Wealth Building the Black Wealth Building Network.com. That's my website.
Okay. Okay, and the title
but
of your
I like
book.
To tell people. Go ahead.
I was just going to say,
I am on
remind
Facebook
you, the title of your
Instagram.
Book is the Black Financial Literacy and Wealth
and
Building
Wealth-building
Bible.
And Wealth Building Bible, yes. The Black Financial Literacy and Wealth Building Bible.
Right. David,
all right.
What you are talking about is really very simple to understand. You make it very easy to understand. And just imagine if we could get a massive amount of Black people to learn what you talked about today. It's not really hard to understand, you know, the way you put it. And so in moving forward, that we're going to be having some seminars, workshops in the community, and I'd like to invite you to come out and just teach this to the masses, which is really what you really want to do. So we can talk about that in the future if you like.
You guys are doing great work. Anytime you need me to talk or do a workshop, I'm here for you. You know, that's part of that first giving principle we talked about. You know, you got to have a financial legacy. You got to give back, and I believe
right.
If you give back, you get so much more back in return.
Right. Now you have the Minority Financial Literacy Center. Can you tell us a little bit about that before we?
Well, you know, I started that in about 2011, and that basically taught financial wealth building principles, how to save, invest in the stock market or real estate, credit, how to have, you know, credit repair, that kind of thing, group investing. But I'll be frank with you, I did that for like 2 years. I'm a full profit person. I'm not a non-profit person. I'm a for-profit person. I'm not a non-profit, so I don't like the idea of having to go to anybody for anything when it comes to
you
know, non-profit. That's not me. So, we can do this ourselves. We don't need a lot of help. But if I can't do it by myself, I'm going to combine with my brother to do it. And one of the things
right.
I'm going to say, last thing I'm going to say, Joe, don't be afraid to talk about wealth. Don't hide it, because if nobody doesn't know what your condition, somebody might be able to help you. You might have an investment partner sitting next to you, but if he doesn't know your financial situation or know what you're trying to do, we're Black people. We'll talk about everything but money. We'll talk about each other. We'll talk about everything else. But when it comes to money, we all get quiet. You know, but that,
right.
You see a lot of races together, you know, in the garage or whatever. They're talking money. You know, they're talking business. You know, what I need to do to go in business. What are you doing? How can I help you? You know, there are investment groups out there that, you know, investment clubs that they form, and each one of them puts in so much money, and they support that brother, and after he gets on his feet, then they support the next brother. So there's a lot of different ways you can raise money, you know. But you got to know you got to talk about it.
Right, right. Well, David, we got to have you on the show. We, I had a kind of a shorter version today.
I apologize.
But,
that was my fault.
Well, that just gives us the opportunity to have you back again soon, David. So, everybody, thanks for calling in today. We're going to be on next week as well. We have a gentleman who started who heads a community center in South Sacramento. His name is Bill Knowlton. So that should be an interesting show today. But David, again, thank you so much for coming on the show today. And I hope that we can continue our relationship, you and me and the council elders.
Okay. Keep up the good. God bless you, and keep up the great work you're doing, elders.
Okay. All right,
thank
everybody.
You.
Thanks again. Dear Heavenly Father, we just ask you to bless everybody that was listening to this show today. Lord, we ask that everybody can go out and have a wonderful rest of their weekend. In Jesus' name, amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for attending our show today, and I look forward to seeing you and hearing you again